But first of all, we shall want sunlight. Nothing much can grow in the dark. Meditation is our step into the sun. How then shall we meditate? We talked earlier about not casting a shadow on your own light. I told you how I meditate. I told you how I learned. I learned to meditate by staying still and listening in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was the beginning. Beginning to listen to you, I was able to listen to myself, and now I can listen to all there is. It doesn't have words. But what about the rest of us less fortunate don't even know how to begin? And how to begin what? The spiritual conscious connection. And they give you lots of examples of these people, and lots of it. And then they tell you about this man who was not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe he was, we don't really know. But apparently it doesn't say he was. The guy was a saint, St. Francis, I believe. Oh, no, St. Francis of Assisi, yes. And they talk about how this guy, like us. Now, he wasn't an alcoholic, but he's a guy like us. Just because we're alcoholics doesn't mean we're the only ones blessed with these emotional, traumatic collision of instincts. And he went through the emotional ringer. We talked about emotional hangovers, emotional ringer. And he came out of the other side of that painful experience. This prayer was his expression of what he could then see, feel, and wish to become. The wish to become is the spiritual side of your nature. You wish for a perception change, or you wouldn't be here today. You've already got enough humility to have come. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace. Step 12. Every time you share in a meeting, every time you talk to another member of Alcoholics Anonymous, every time you pick up the phone, that there, where there is hatred, I may bring love. And every time you empty yourself out, when you make that amend in step 8, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, the spirit of forgiveness we talked about in step 9. That where there is discord, I may bring harmony. When you pause, it is harmonious. That where there is error, I may bring truth. Step 4 is where you find your own truth. That where there is doubt, I may bring faith. Step 3 is the decision. That where there is despair, I may bring hope. Step 2, come to believe, is the hope. That where there are shadows, I may bring light. Meditation and prayer. Step 11. That there, where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Carry the message. Step 12. Lord, that I may seek rather to comfort. Step 12, than to be comforted. And to understand than to be understood. Step 8. To love and then to be loved. Step 6 and 7. To love myself and then to be loved by my God. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven. To forgive means not to judge. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. In other words, in simple English, it is by letting those old ideas die and the introduction of new ideas that you find eternal life. Make room for the answer. Powerful, major promises. It will help if we can drop all resistance. In the big book, they call it prejudice. For in meditation, debate has no place. We rest quietly with the thought of someone who knows so that we may experience and learn. That someone can be someone speaking at a meeting. It can be a guide. It can be your spiritual advisor. It can be a sponsor. It can be a person you talk to. It can be an angel. It can be God pretending. God is sitting in the car beside you. Start talking to somebody, somewhere, somehow, and get in the practice of it so that when you are alone and by yourself, you will be able to develop this constant conversation with all there is. Get ready to talk to each other so that you can practice with each other to talk to the people that are not in front of you that you cannot see. It's all about practice. Let us become willing to partake and be strengthened and lifted by the sheer spiritual power, beauty, and love of which these magnificent words are the carriers. Perhaps our trouble was not that we used our imagination. Perhaps the real trouble was that our almost total inability to point imagination toward the right objectives. There's nothing the matter with constructive imagination. All sound achievement rests upon it. Dream. Who are you? Where are you going? Who do you want to be? That's constructive imagination. It's an experience of humility to want to accept where you are and go somewhere else. To ask to go is humility. Take me there. This is who I am. This is what I'd like to be. In the image of God. I mean, every religion has its own way of saying it. I mean, constructive imagination, a feeling of peace. How does it feel to be peaceful? If you can't imagine that, how are you going to know what happened to you? After all, no man can build him a house until he first envisions a plan for it. Well, meditation is like that too. It helps us to envision our spiritual objective before we try to move toward it. Sometimes for me, it's nothing more than I just need peace, just need to be calm, quiet. I sit down and write a Dear God letter and all the stuff that's on my mind about what I can't do. It's always really pretty current. In fact, it's only current. You know, a lot of the time I just put my head down and I know by looking down that I'm terrified my sister will die. So I have to write about it. And say, you know, geez, I'm really scared. I don't want that to happen. I had to get so truthful that in order to really, really feel peace with that, I had to write about how annoyed I would be and all the things that would, how it would disturb my life if she did die. I mean, that's how honest you can get, really. You know, yes, there was the sadness connected to it, but oh, hell, there'd be a lot of trouble, you know? It'd be a lot of problems, and I'd have to take on the responsibility for this, that, and the other thing, and it'd be annoying, and there'd be more for me to do. Then I could get right down to what was really happening. Christ, I was sad. Sad. Couldn't do anything. Powerless. Can't fix this one. Can't create it. Can't buy it. Can't do anything. Jesus, it's a terrible place to be. Unable to, and to watch these things happen. And nobody listens to you when they say, look, you know, because did I listen to anybody before I hit the bathroom floor? Hell no. Doesn't mean I'm not over there trying. Believe me, it doesn't matter how long you're sober, Al-Anon or AA or to hell with it, you're still trying. The only thing is, you try for a little shorter periods of time and you get these moments alone where you can heal yourself. Go back to your soul and say, give me some strength and have some peace. Because the peace is not going to come from the result of that change with that person. The peace is going to come from the result of a change in my attitude, my mind. I should do more. I've done all I can. How many times in the last month have I said to Jane about the exact same situation? Okay, now I've done all I can. Then I go do some more. And I say, now I've done all I can. Well, now I'll feel better because if anything happens, I've done all I can. Finally, on the plane, looking out the window, thinking I'm sad about my uncle dying in Ireland, I really realize, whoa, I'm sad about my sister. That's what I'm really sad about. I'm so sad about all those things, I can't even think about the results of that stuff. So what do? I'm going to just do nothing. I'm going to do nothing, and I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to say, hey, God, what the hell do you want me to do? Is there anything I forgot to do? Is there anything I need to do? What would you like me to do? What do I need to do? Can I send, you know, and I know when I say that a cast of angels has gone out to hell. I don't have to be the one. That the thought has got wings. That the prayer has got wings and it's on its way. That it's instantaneously. That maybe I can't talk to her, but the higher nature of my self is talking to the higher nature of herself and we are negotiating peace for both of us. They will take care of both of us. This God consciousness that I have and that she has, we are talking about it, we're working it out, we're negotiating it. I'm all fucked up, but they're not. She can't talk to me, we can't talk to each other, but the better nature of who we are, that's happening. And all I have to do is make room for it to happen and give it more room and give it more space. And how I do that is by getting out of the way and sitting there and having this prayer and meditation work in my life and using that 11th step and having conscious contact by saying, help me, help me, help me. Huge. Immediate. Today. says that the word constructive in the dictionary says serving to advance a good purpose and helpful. Next came the expression of, and then she talked about the channel. First, he wanted to become a channel, it said in that prayer, and then he asked for grace. And I believe what Bill Wilson, the reason he chose that specific prayer, only two prayers have ever been associated with Alcoholics Anonymous officially. And that is the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi, because it is literally the steps. And the Serenity Prayer, because it opens the door of acceptance. Next, and then he said, then he asked for grace. First he became a channel, wanted to become a channel. That's constructive thinking, that you could become a channel for somebody else, that you could give more, that you could be better, that you could be more available, that you're willing to share, that you're willing to come, that you're willing to give, that you're willing to put out the coffee, do the taping, whatever. And then he asked for grace, grace. Another dictionary says, a disposition to be helpful or generous, seemingly effortless, beauty or charm of movement, form or proportion. No resistance. No resistance. Don't fight the position, Lila. Beauty of charm, movement, form, or position. Proportion. Next came the expression of an aspiration or a hope for himself. You know, I hear this stuff in AA, don't pray for yourself. What is that? Who the hell's going to pray for you if you don't pray for yourself? I'm too self-obsessed to pray for you. I'm not going to do it. I'm praying for my sister because it's going to hurt me. Next came the expression of an aspiration and a hope for himself. A prayer for yourself is the greatest constructive imaginative thought you can have. He hoped, God willing, that he might be able to find some of these treasures too. This he would try to do by what he called self-forgetting. Attitude of gratitude, saying thank you, will help you to self-forget immediately. He thought it would be better to give comfort than to receive it, better to understand than to be understood, and better to forgive than to be forgiven. This could be a fragment of what is called meditation, perhaps our very first attempt at a mood, a flyer into the realm of the spirit. Beautiful. Realm of the spirit in the 12 and 12. Fourth dimension in the big book. It ought to be followed by a good look at where we stand now. Didn't say yesterday. It said now. Now is today. And a further look at what might happen in our lives, were we able to move closer to the ideal we have been trying to glimpse. He's literally telling you now, if you want this meditation, this is how you can have it. Where are you today? Well, you know now, 4-5 will tell you that. And where would you like to go? Accept yourself and go where God would like you to go. Humbly ask. Meditation is something that which can always be further developed. It has no boundaries, either by width or height. In the big book, they call it the fourth dimension. It's literally the fourth dimension, something that has no boundaries, no width, no height. Everything correlates. Aided by such instruction and examples, we find it is essentially an individual adventure. This is not a we. This is not a group. This is not you can all do for each other. This is a individual adventure. I cannot meditate for you. You cannot meditate for me. It's impossible. I cannot work the steps for you. You cannot work them for me. This is the one thing we're doing by ourselves. Now, we may have lots of friends when we drank, but we drank by ourselves. Because if there was no more booze, they would be gone. This is an individual experience. The we is the fellowship. The I is the program. Just like the tradition, the first tradition. You know, without the we, I would forget the I. So I must protect the we. I must go to meetings. I must go to AA. Because if I don't go to AA, then pretty soon we all stop going to AA, there'll be no AA. And if I forget AA, I will forget me. So I can't forget you, regrettably, sometimes. Because you're the greatest protection I have that I'll stay on the path. Okay, and a further look at what might happen in our lives were we able to move closer to the ideal we have been trying to glimpse. Meditation, it has no boundaries, I told you that. Aided by such instruction and example as we find it is essentially an individual adventure, something which each one of us works out in his own way. But its object is always the same. everybody has the same solution. How we do it now is our own business. But the solution, the problem is the same, and the problem is that we were alcoholics, drunk and falling down alcoholics. The problem is now that we are sober people in search of God. The solution is exactly the same. To improve our conscious contact with God, with God's grace, wisdom, and love. And let's always remember that meditation is, in reality, intensely practical. One of its first fruits is emotional balance. Physical, emotional, spiritual, social, sexual, security, instincts, and balance. Prayer is the raising of the heart and the mind to God. The question, the asking for help. Prayer is commonly understood as a petition to God. Having opened our channel as best we can, we try to ask for those right things of which we and others are in greatest need. As the day goes on, we can pause and say, Thy will, not mine, be done. Turn it over to God and ask for the power to carry that out. I'm really good at turning it over. I completely forget about the power to carry it out part. I have it back within seconds. It's as if if at these points our emotional disturbance happens to be great, we will more surely keep our balance, provided we remember and repeat to ourselves a particular prayer or phrase that has appealed to us in our reading or meditation. Now, this is really important, because I'm a creature of habit, and in order to prove this spiritual memory and increase the sixth sense, this intuitive sense, and when I'm truly troubled, in order to know how to pause, I have to have something that opens up that door when I get jammed like that. And for me, it can be a multitude of things, as I mentioned earlier. Now, yesterday we talked about old ideas and new ideas, and that I have one every year. Help me to feel that I am enough. Help me not to be afraid. Help me, whatever. Help me will do. So if I can just say the phrase, help me, hey, I'm already there. I get catapulted, as it says in the big book. And the big book says, catapulted into the floor. I mean, it's tremendous stuff. Bam, I'm done, I'm there. Or I can say the serenity prayer. It'll do it for me right away. But you must have some secret little thing that works really well for you. Your own little thing, whatever it is. 1, 2, 3, pause. Serenity prayer, help me, whatever else. Thank you works too. Thank you. Thank you works really well. Thank you. It's really important to have that. Just saying it over and over, practice, over and over, will often enable us to clear a channel choked up with anger, fear, frustration, or misunderstanding, and permit us to return to the surest help of all, our search for God's will, not our own, in the moment of stress. You use your will to state the phrase, to say the prayer, to ask the question, so that your will can cooperate and get in line with God's will, which is where the answer is. Here is the path, there is the light. Why have I cast a shadow on that light? It is me that must move the shadow. I must change. The light is permanent, forever, never changes. I cast the shadow. I must step aside. At these critical moments, if we remind ourselves that it is better to be comforted to be comforted, to understand to be understood, to be loved to be loved, is at those moments too, the minute you say thank you, that you're willing to reach out. The minute you say the serenity prayer, you know there's nothing else you can do. By doing nothing, you are giving someone the greatest single gift of their life. You are showing them that you believe in something, that you can actually stop and turn it over, that there's something in you that is so powerful and so big, and they're going to wonder. And when they're through blaming you for deserting them and abandoning them and being the person that they can no longer use and manipulate, they're going to know that you've given them the truest love at all, of all, that you really love them. You love them enough to pray for them. You love them enough to wish them well in this journey and the next. You love them enough to know, to say, I will be of service to you as best I can. It's really big. I think we talked earlier about Carl Jung, where it's more appropriate probably here, when he said, it's to watch is not to love. I mean, to love is not to watch. And then, why can't we take a specific and troubling dilemma straight to God and in prayer secure from Him a sure and definite answer to our request? Well, you ultimately will get a sure and definite answer. It just won't be one that you'll understand as sure and definite in your language. Because all we can do, if we think we have a sure and definite answer from God and this is it, I can assure you it probably isn't. Because I have yet, in my experience, to get an answer from God that didn't take quite a while before I understood what the answer was. A series of events, a series of unusual and wonderful events that came in little miracles, running into the right person at the right time, at the right place, reading the right thing, feeling the right thing, being in the right moment, making that phone call. My mother called her brother in Ireland the day before he died. Long talk with him. Hadn't talked to him in months. She's in California. He's in Dunmore, County Galway. She called him the day before she died. He died. Why? Well, she just had this feeling. She called him. Big, long talk. Died that evening. He was fine on the phone. Felt great. He's blessed. So is she. She made the call. I might have been too busy, not gotten to it. Who's more spiritual? Then they talk about unconscious rationalizations. Well, we all know what those are. Those are our own things. It is A.A.'s experience that particularly in these cases we ought to pray for God's will, whatever it is, be done for others as well as ourselves. I love praying for other people. That's all I can do for them. All those who have persisted have found strength not ordinarily their own. They have found wisdom beyond their usual capability, and they have increasingly found a peace of mind which can stand firm in the face of difficult circumstances. It's a description of humility. That's a description of the Serenity Prayer, too. It's a description of anybody that does this enough times. That's what you feel. That's how you feel. And you know what? You don't even recognize it until I'm telling you right now. You will each have in your life this moment, if you give it a moment's thought, a time when you have found strength not ordinarily your own. You have found wisdom beyond your usual capability, and you have increasingly found peace of mind which can stand firm in the face of difficult circumstances. Have any of you not had that moment? If you pay attention to it and have conscious contact with it, you will have it all the time. It is the natural state of our being to be like that. That's what we're being restored to. That exists in us. We just are being put in balance to receive more of that. It's natural. That's the natural state. The nature of our wrongs is that we have taken that out of balance. And it tells you, for the people that have a hard time about trying to improve your conscious contact with God, and that we only pray when there's the greatest exertion of will, perhaps one of the greatest rewards of meditation and prayer is the sense of belonging that comes over us. We all say the Lord's Prayer. I say it silently. I say actually the Serenity Prayer because I just do, and I just started to do that. But I hear the hum of that prayer, and at that moment, I feel a belonging in the room. And I feel like we're doing something all together. It really makes me feel good. I mean, it makes me feel so good that I can think of 1,000 times in my sobriety where I've been, you know, rushing like mad, maybe in New York City or wherever I was, and jumping out of the car and looking at the watch and, oh, geez, I just have enough time to just jump down the street to the mustard seed there, that little place, and get the Serenity Prayer, I mean, the Lord's Prayer. I got there in time for the prayer. I missed the meeting, but I got there for the prayer. And, oh, I felt great. And then I'd walk back to the hotel and I would feel terrific. I got there for the prayer. I killed myself to get there for the prayer. I didn't even say the bloody Lord's Prayer. I got there to feel that. We no longer live in a completely hostile world. We are no longer lost and frightened and purposeless promises all over the place. The moment we catch even a glimpse of God's will, the moment we begin to see the truth, justice, and love, as the real and eternal things in life, we are no longer deeply disturbed by the seemingly evidence to the contrary that surrounds us in purely human affairs. Isn't that beautiful? We know that God lovingly watches over us. Don't forget in the definition of grace, it says to be protected. We know that when we turn to God, all will be well with us here and hereafter. Hereafter. I mean, you're taking care of this soul that you are probably going to have a million times. You don't think you know yourself? That soul's been hanging with you. You know yourself really well. We're all old souls in AA. There are no new souls in Alcoholics Anonymous. You have to be an old soul to be dragging yourself through the shit that we dragged ourselves to, believe. Step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in our affairs. You know, the original 12 step, when it was written originally, before Bill changed it and revised it ever so slightly, said, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of this course of action, we try to carry this message to others, especially alcoholics, and to practice these principles in all affairs. Isn't that interesting? This is the accept yourself, receive. This is the final gift. This is the beauty of the 12 steps. This is what happens to us all the time. We just don't have enough conscious contact to recognize it. This is the miracle we live in. This is always there. We just have to see it. The joy of living. Can you imagine us and the joy of living being in the same sentence? Amazing. Here we experience the kind of giving that asks no rewards. Here we begin to practice all 12 steps of the program in our daily lives. It doesn't say do them once, do them every few months with your soul. You're saying do it when you think you have a problem. It's all 12 steps of the program in our daily lives so that we can, and those about us, find emotional sobriety. You're on the 12th step now. It's the last leg of the journey. You're way, way, way ahead of a drink. The defense against the drink is the 12 steps. The cushion, this insurance policy, is the enlargement of your spiritual life. Your emotional sobriety will determine whether or not you'll stay sober. Your emotional sobriety will determine whether or not you'll have peace. The 12 steps are for to find emotional sobriety. Our 12th step also says that as a result of practicing all the steps, we have found something called a spiritual awakening. Spiritual awakening, where the man has now become able to feel, do, and believe that which he could not do before on his unaided strength and resources alone. Mm-hmm. He has been granted a gift which amounts to a new state of consciousness and being. He has been set on a path which tells him he is going somewhere. Don't you love that you're going somewhere? Don't you particularly love you don't have a clue where it is? That life is not a dead end, nor something to be endured or mastered. In a very real sense, he has been transformed. Before, because he has laid hold of a source of strength, which in one way or another, he has hitherto denied himself. He finds himself in possession of a degree of honesty, tolerance, unselfishness, peace of mind, and love of which he has thought himself quite incapable. What he has received is a free gift, and yet usually, at least in some small part, he has made himself ready to receive it. Don't forget the sixth step, for it says, cooperate with God. Proper use of the will is to cooperate with God. AA's manner of making ready to receive this gift lies in the practice of the 12 steps in our program. Couldn't be more clear. So let's consider briefly what we have been trying to do up to this point. Step 1, the amazing paradox of powerlessness. Step 2, seek a higher power. Step 3, turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand that God. And also it says, for the time being, discover your own group, AA as a whole, will do. Don't forget, however, that their job is to take you across the threshold into a spiritual life. Don't get stuck there. Step 4, we have commenced to search out things in ourselves which brought us to physical, moral, and spiritual bankruptcy. Those were the social, sexual, and security instincts that went out of collision. Step 5, we knew we would have to quit the daily business of living alone with our conflicts. Step 6, many of us balked. because we did not want to have, wish to have all of our character defects removed, yet we knew we had to make a settlement with the fundamental principle of step six. The fundamental principle of step six is cooperation with God. The fundamental principle of cooperation with God is you must accept yourself as you are today. God does not want any perfect people. Competition. Why put you here? Why have the experience? Why go through it? You are loved for the search, for the falling down and the getting up and for the imperfection and for trying to achieve a perfect ideal. Humility is reaching for a perfect ideal and knowing it. So in step six it says, we ought to nevertheless quit our stubborn, rebellious hanging on to these character defects, contrary actions, stop them, turn them over. Step seven, humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings under the conditions of the day we ask. Really important. The day we ask. Today. Today, I may have a whole bunch of things that I need help with that were completely different than yesterday, and I don't have a clue about tomorrow. And step eight, continue to our house cleaning. We began to make our peace. Step nine, direct amends to those concerned except when it would injure them or other people. Step ten, we had begun to get a basis for daily living. Continue to take personal inventory. Step 11, we found that dependence on his perfect justice, forgiveness, and love was healthy. Well, what is perfect justice, forgiveness, and love? What could that God be giving you if you used other words for that? What happens when you get perfect justice, forgiveness, and love? There's no judgment there. You are not judged for anything. And love was healthy, and it would work where nothing else would. If we really depended upon God, we couldn't very well play God to our fellows, nor could we feel the urge wholly to rely on human protection and care. A human being will ultimately do what Scotch did. I mean, you can be disappointed. You'll never be disappointed if you've got God. And chances are you'll surround yourself with human beings who won't disappoint you either. These were the new attitudes that finally brought many of us, the new ideas, that finally brought many of us an inner strength and peace that could not be deeply shaken by the shortcomings of others or by calamity not of our own making. That is a huge spiritual promise. I mean, the promises in this book. Then it goes on to talk about how lonely it was to be, now they give you a promise, they tell you what it's like not to use that promise. You know, the loneliness of alcoholism and all of that, and how unhappily, and then they go on to talk to you about sex and security, and I'm going to skip all of that and read about it, and about the three areas of instinct that go out of awry and how to handle those, and how you're going to need a willingness to repair all that, and behave like a partner in your marriage, and you're going to have to realize that, you know, the prospective partners need to be solid AAs and long enough acquainted to know their compatibility at spiritual, mental, and emotional levels is a fact and not wishful thinking. I mean, you're going to really have to look at yourself and begin to look at the people that you attract and that you have in your life. And, I mean, really, you can't drag people down this path kicking and screaming. And you can't blame them if you're dragging them for you're not progressing. And worst of all, it says here, we forgot God. You know, that's the worst thing that's going to happen after this indifference and apathy and all that sets in. You'll forget God. And money matters, it says, in money matters we had faith only in ourselves. And they go on to talk about all of those things. But as time passed, we found with the help of AA's 12 steps, we would lose those fears no matter what our material prospects were. So they're talking about not harming your family, having a change of attitude there, not being afraid of the financial situation. If our circumstances happened to be good, we no longer dreaded a change for the worse, for we had learned that these troubles could be turned into great values. It did not matter much what our material condition was, but it did matter a lot what our spiritual condition was. When, with God's help, we calmly accepted our lot, step six, then we found we could live at peace with ourselves and show others who still suffered the same fears that we could overcome, get over them too. We found that freedom from fear was more important than freedom from want. Step 7. He learns that he can be content as long as he plays well whatever cards life deals him, acceptance. He's still ambitious, but not absurdly so, because he can now see and accept actual reality. The difference between real and imagined. It's also that yoga thing, no resistance. We have seen that we were prodded by unreasonable fears or anxieties, unreasonable, imagined, into making a life business of winning fame, money, and what we thought was leadership. So false pride became the reverse of the ruinous coin marked fear. We simply had to be number one people to cover up our deep lying inferiorities. In fitful successes, we boasted of greater feats to be done. In defeat, we were bitter. If we didn't have much of any worldly success, we became depressed and cowed. Then people said we were of the inferior type. But now, we see ourselves as chips of the same old block. At heart, we had all been abnormally fearful. Out of balance, way out of balance. It mattered little whether we sat on the shore of life drinking ourselves into forgetfulness or had plunged in recklessly and willfully beyond our depth. But today, this is a cute little thing they say, in well-matured AAs. I don't know that that's like the amount of sobriety. I do think it's the amount of experience on the spiritual path. And the amount of experience is only something only becomes an experience when it's acknowledged. That's why people tend to do the same thing over and over and over again. It's not an experience. It's just something that happens to them over and over and over and over and over again. They say, why doesn't this always happen to me? Because you never complete the experience. You've never taken it to God, and you've never seen what would happen if that went away. Do you have enough faith to find out what is behind that fear? Somebody asked me yesterday, you know, about faith, and I said, well, the greatest example of faith is there's a cliff, jump off. That's the third step, by the way. There it is, jump off. Will you be caught? Of course you'll be caught. I don't know where, though. And then talks about service, true service. Service gladly rendered, obligations squarely met, troubles well accepted and solved with God's help. The knowledge that at home or in the world outside, we are partners in a common effort. The well-understood fact that in God's sight, all human beings are important. The proof that love freely given surely brings a full return. The certainty that we are no longer isolated and alone in self-constructed prisons. The surety that we need no longer be square pegs in round holes, but can fit and belong in God's scheme of things. These are the permanent and legitimate satisfactions of right living for which no amount of pomp or circumstance, no heap of material possessions could possibly be substitutes. True ambition is not what we thought it was. True ambition is a deep desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God, the love and protection of God. For it is only by accepting and solving our problems that we begin to get right with ourselves and with the world around us and with Him who presides over all. Understanding is the key to right principles and attitudes, and right action is the key to good living. Therefore, the joy of good living is the theme of AA's 12 steps. With each passing day of our lives, every one of us senses more deeply the inner meaning of AA's simple prayer. God grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. That's it. There's no more. Every time I read the 12 and 12, it's brand new. I'm standing up here now, having just read all those things, and it's like they're brand new. It's a new feeling every time I read it. It's so comforting and so assuring and gives me so much strength. I hope it's the same for you, and I hope it's been helpful, and I appreciate you letting me come to Tulsa. I do want to take some time, since it's 4:15, if you have any questions, anything at all, that you would like to talk about, I would be happy to do that. If not, we don't have to. No? You do.
I want to do something that I am struggling with right now is feeling part of my spirituality I'm starting to, venture into speaking of God as Spirit of the Universe, but at the same time I was brought up in a different way. So, in trying to answer something that's so blasphemous, because I feel like I'm rebellious, and there are a lot of things in my spirituality that I read that sound like punishing, and I rebel instantly. And then the next step to that is I feel I rebel, and then I feel guilty, and then I'm even more separated from God. And then I'm, very close to the brink of breaking my abstinence. So that's one of the things I'm looking for, a new idea to do, because I keep going in the same circle. I mean, I come back to meeting and I feel better, but I need a new idea to change that, to stop it completely. I have a very hard time stopping at it.
Did you all hear that question? Oh, yeah, for the thing. Hoping you say, yeah, I all heard it, and we can just go right on. If I understand what you just said to me, then what you're saying is that you have a pretty much fundamentalist religious God that you are having a problem with because you in AA have come to see God in a much broader way. And the God that you see in AA seems to lack judgment, and the God of your religion seems to be of judgment. Is that right?
My God isn't vengeful or judging, but sometimes I read that from the human side of the religion that I belong to.
I see.
And I have a very hard time separating the human part.
Mm-hmm.
I get really caught up in the human side instead of the spiritual side, because they boxed it all up.
I see. So as my friend Sylvie Santillon would, I have to imagine now what she would say, because she talks about this quite regularly, and she was raised as a Jehovah's Witness. And I've learned so much listening to her speak about her transition from this very, very, very strict religion to her changing concept of God in AA and how to take the best from that. And my own experience was that of Roman Catholic in Ireland, nuns and all of that, to this tremendously broad concept, and how to make that transition. It's very, very difficult, because when you're raised with the concept of good, and this is my experience now, first of all, to qualify, I have great respect for any religion, because it doesn't matter to me. I have a spiritual outlook. It doesn't really matter to me. It only matters to me if you try to convince me that I should have your religion. Then I have a really big problem with that. But if you do your thing and I do mine, we're going to get along fine. I just can't imagine that even if there is a heaven, that all the paths don't get to the same place, personally. And I can't imagine that there's a God who really would make us suffer like that. I just don't believe it. I think it's good crowd control. I mean, you ask me my opinion, this is the truth, I might as well tell it to you. This is what I think. I think it's great control. I think it was necessary. I mean, you got all these people running out there. If you don't tell them you're going to do something to them, they're going to go wild. And there was enough going on to upset a few people, and so be it. I try to read the Bible, and I believe that there's great things in there. There's great symbology. But I have a really hard time believing that it's the Word of God. I mean, I just can't imagine that the guy would have been that well documented in the short period of time that he spun around. So either he had the best PR people. So I think there's a large, broad amount of interpretation. And that's why I think that the spiritual path is so individual. Because from that, you take all the good things and you leave what you want, leave the rest. That's what they say in AA, isn't it? Take what you want and leave the rest. It's very difficult. I will tell you that I have found great solace from my religious background, being raised Roman Catholic, when I have had great pain. Death of my brother, I spent a lot of time in St. Patrick's Cathedral in front of the altar to St. Anthony. When I lose something, instantly call upon a prayer to one of the saints to find it for me. Still works. I have a comforting feeling, even though they annoy me, seeing all that stuff up on my mother's wall, the Sacred Heart and crucifixes and little water things, makes me feel comforted. So I still use it for what I get out of it. Do I believe in fire and hell and damnation? Absolutely not. I mean, it took me years on AA to not believe that. And to not believe, to believe that there's no good or bad, that you're not going to be, that I don't believe in karma. Try that. You know, I just don't believe it. I don't believe what goes around comes around. I believe you have a chance to correct it the minute you do it. And it isn't going to come back if you make the amend and you adjust it. I believe the steps allow you to do that. Right in the middle of the stream, you go, whoop, it's like the young lady that told me. You know, the first negative thing is powerless over it, but the second one, I can do something about it. I can catch that. I can throw that ball back. So I use it for what it gives me. When I first was on AA, I wouldn't have made it without that angel. I wouldn't have made it without a tangible, imagined, pretend angel. I was talking to this guy in Moscovina about the angel one night, I guess, and I mean, in a meeting, another couple of guys. I didn't even see this one guy. And geez, I've had this angel, you know, for a year because I just couldn't make it. And I had to lean into the angel. I felt safe with the angel. The angel was in my car. The angel came to work. I talked to the angel, put it in the bathroom, sat it on the tub, sat it on the toilet. I mean, I had that angel everywhere. I needed that angel with me for a whole year. And, you know, kind of at the end of the year, I was able to change a little bit. Well, that angel was a very Catholic angel. It was on the right, for God's sake, you know. Big. Right out of the picture. You know, years later, I was in a West Covina meeting at the 502 Club. In West Covina, they have a 502 Club that Jane mentions in Pasadena. But in a 502 Club, and this huge, big motorcycle guy comes in, bald head. I mean, huge. Big leather vest, no t-shirt, nothing, and just hair and vest. I mean, you give you an idea, okay? Huge bike. Oh, takes up about two parking places. Not at all. A guy comes right up to me, and I thought, oh, no. You know, I'd spoken, I hadn't been speaking very much. It was like the middle of my sobriety, and I'm still in that, like, I believe in angels, and, you know, because I still did. And I was praying like mad, and I was lighting candles to everybody. I mean, what the hell? Whatever works, you know? And I was doing it all, because I still didn't have any belief that I was even, that there was even a God. I was just doing all this in hopes there was. I mean, Duke said to me, act as if, make one up. Okay, I'll take an angel. That's what I like. So I was doing all of this stuff, and I thought, oh, God, this is the kind of guy that's going to come up to me and say, what are you talking about, all this religious gibberish? I don't know what the hell you're saying. You know, like, you just, action is the word. You know, if you went out there and worked with a goddamn newcomer, you'd be fine. You know, so I thought, oh, this is it. You know, I was just getting ready to brace myself. And the guy came up, and he said, you know, a couple of years ago, you were out here talking to my friends about this angel you had. I said, yeah. I'm getting ready to defend myself. It says in the book, we don't have to defend ourselves or our God, but oh no, do I know that? No. I'm getting ready to right away. Hey, I don't have that angel anymore. You know, I like, it's okay. I have the angel. Don't worry about it. He says, well, you know, I'm an undercover cop with the whatever, San Bernardino Police Department or something, you know. I said, oh, made it a little easier. Undercover, if you're not like that all the time. This huge, big, scary guy. And he said, I want to thank you for something. I said, oh, what could he possibly want? I mean, I thought I was going to be killed. He said, I want to thank you because when you're finished talking to my friends, you said that if they didn't have a God, why, they could use your angel. He said, you know, I didn't have a God. I'm having a really hard time. Kind of needed somebody with me. It's very scary being an undercover cop. Look at me, he says. I can appreciate that. And he said, you know, I borrowed the angel. And he said, a week later, it caught a bullet for me. And he'd been using it ever since. And the guy, he changed right in front of my eyes. I never saw that big, burly motorcycle guy. I saw the sweetest, warmest, we're crying. You know, it was one of those moments. It was one of those moments. So now that I no longer feel that my God, I'm the one you're talking, has any judgment whatsoever, I honestly believe, and I've said this from podiums before, that if I were to go up to the tower, if I had become so spiritually deficient, then I hadn't talked to anybody and let that indifference and judgment set in, or something awful happened, I would go up to the tower and I hadn't drank, but I, you know, a lot of times people, awful things happen, you don't drink. And I would go up to the top of the tower and just for some reason the rage would be so bad, I would just shoot all these people. I have a God that I expect would not judge me. That no harm would befall me. And I have in my life friends that if I were to get off that tower, I'd go knock on their door. And I would say, you know, Jane, I just shot all these people. And she would say, Lila, You must have gotten too angry, too lonely, too tired. Have you eaten today? Have you been to a meeting? What has happened to you? Whatever it is, we're going to work it out. We're going to work it out. And they would all call each other, and they would come over, and they would make me a cup of tea, and they would get me a banana, and maybe a sandwich. And they'd say, now what do we have to do in order to amend the situation? And I would be loved, because all I had been was just a broken human being that day. And I would have a God that would not throw me away. I would not have to live the rest of my life worrying that I would burn in hell. Now that's an extreme statement to make, but I believe it. I believe that I am going to be welcomed upon leaving this life with joy and love and care, and thanked for hanging in there and not giving up and learning as much as I can. And I believe that if I have any regret on the day that I die, it will be that I never took the moment to say thank you, to smile, that the ripple effect of my intolerance, my selfishness, my dishonesty, and my self-seeking will have hurt somebody. And I'll turn around and I'll look at this life as it goes in front of me, and I will say, oh God, and the pain of having hurt somebody else will be more hell than I'll ever need to experience. And it will be by my choosing that I will look. And that God and that energy and all those people that have gone on before me, just like my friends in my kitchen, if I had to be in that situation, why, they'll be standing there and saying, it's okay, Lila, we have to look too. And I will be loved into the next world. I will be loved into the next world. I was loved into this one. I'll be loved into the next one. There is no reason why I have to wait until the day I die to start feeling that love. That would be a sin. And I don't even believe you can have such a thing. There is no waste. There is no right and wrong. There is no good and bad. I no longer do something to get a reward. I no longer do something to be good. I could care less if you think I'm good. I don't care what you think. I honest to God have enough trouble trying to figure out whether I care about myself. I could give a shit about what you think. If somebody says the way you are and the what doesn't, you're going to go straight to hell. Wonderful. Great. Maybe I will. I don't think so. Where I'm going, you might have more fun. Obviously, you're not coming with me, but I'm not going where you're going, so have a good day. Now, that's how I feel about it. Does that make it easier for you? It puts it in human terms. Take the best of your religion. Even now when I go into a Roman Catholic church, I mean, if I see somebody there that doesn't kneel down in front of you, I am offended. I think, don't they have any respect? I, who don't go into the place. But when I do, I am immediately Catholic, immediately Irish Catholic. I want it in Latin. I went to the funeral mass for my brother. It's been a long time since I've been, and it was in English. I said to my mother, what the hell happened to the Roman Catholic church? I like the Latin. I like all the stuff. I like to get high on that smoke stuff. I want it all to... My mother said, well, now, everybody's receiving, you know, Irish Catholic families strung out for two rows. Everybody's going to be going to communion. I said, oh, geez, I'm the only one not going. I thought, well, why aren't you going? The little voice said, you're not going, Lila, because you haven't been to confessions in, you know, a long time. Look what has happened to you. Since you haven't been to confession. And you know, I sat there and I thought, wait a minute. I've been to AA. I'm as kind as you can be. I'm confessing all the time to somebody about something. I said to my mother, I'm going. Oh, the look on her face. Just lost her son and she just lost her daughter at the exact same moment. And she just, you know, mothers who have raised people like us, why, they just shrug and they go, ah, geez, turn me right over to her Catholic people. And I went to receive communion. I couldn't believe it. They touched the host. I practically shot on a plane back to Ireland. I was so wrecked. Suddenly all my fears came back. They're touching the host, they speak English, the altar is reversed. What is going on here? This is terrible. The world's going to end as a result of this kind of thing. Now, you don't think that I still have a little bit of the Catholic in me? The guy's mumbling something, my mouth is open, my mother says to me, Lila, say amen, say thank you. Say, but now you have to talk back to the priest so you can get the host? The whole thing upset me. I don't practice my religion. But believe me, for those that do, they should do it right. I think there's great symbology and a lot to be learned from all of the different religions. That's what concerns me about Alcoholics Anonymous being restricted now with things like the Lord's Prayer and all the other stuff that we kind of put into it. It was a good idea at the time, but, you know, it's way beyond the United States of America now, Alcoholics Anonymous. It's in Canada and the Middle East and all other kind of countries. And I really think that, you know, it's enough with the St. Francis Prayer of Assisi because it's so general and so broad. And the Serenity Prayer does not identify any kind of God. But I think that all religions contribute something. And this is the truth. I think that Jesus, Mary, Joseph, and every one of them are almost equal. Buddha, everybody came here. They were all messengers. Are they any different than the shy man in the back of the room? Really? Really? So it's there to give us some sort of parameter. But somebody like me, well, I can't live within those parameters. That's why I drank. I don't want any rules. I don't want anything. So I've come to Alcoholics Anonymous to get away from all of that. And now I have 12 steps that I must absolutely do every day. I have meetings that I must go to all of the time. I have books I have to read in the morning. I have people I don't even know that I have to talk to. I have more rules and regulations in my life than I know what to do with. And I'm madly in love with the ritual and the discipline. Don't be afraid of somebody else's opinion. It doesn't count. They won't be there with you when you meet your God. It will be just you. And for any question that I have left, what do I do about the fact that I am afraid? I mean, how many years have I written about my fear of judgment? I'm so terrified. For so many years, I was so terrified that I was going to be judged, that I wasn't doing the right thing, that I wasn't doing enough, that I wasn't good enough to my family, wasn't good enough to this one, wasn't good enough. I'm going to die, I'm going to be judged. I can't live like that. It couldn't be true. You know why I don't think it's true? I don't think it's true because for the first time, I really don't speak about this a lot, but for the first time I believe that there's a life after this one. I believe that we go on and that there's more. I don't understand what shape or form it is, but I believe it exists. I believe that there's an invisible world. I believe there's a world of silence. And I believe that I have a foot in it. And I believe that the path I've taken in Alcoholics Anonymous, ever so gradually, the couple of times they mention your soul here and hereafter, confirms that. And I believe that I'm kind of walking back and forth between these two places. I heard a story not too long ago about the pass through the Alps, very, very difficult drive from, I think, Italy to somewhere, Swiss Alps. And, you know, it's a very narrow road, and when you're driving on these, if there's an accident, you're backed up for hours and hours and hours, because it's not like here. And there was a big accident. This is a story. I mean, they're all supposed to be true. Do I know? No. But did I hear it, and did it change my life? Absolutely. Heard a long time ago. So I'm using my own interpretation, because years have gone by since I've heard it. But there's this big accident on this road. So the family, you know, in August in Europe, they all travel, and this particular family, and they were stuck for hours, you know, on the side of the road because of the accident up ahead. And this one person was sitting in the car and was wondering, you know, about the poor people up ahead, because as the vehicles go by, very slow in Europe, very different than here, they knew that, you know, by the type of the vehicles and everything, that, you know, somebody obviously died. And it had to die because the backup was so very long. And the number of vehicles and everything. This woman started to pray for whoever it was that was dying or died. She didn't know. She just started to pray for whoever it was that was dying. She had all this time to waste, and she'd had time. So she's praying away about the poor person in the accident, and I hope that they're okay, and if they're not okay, and I'm going to pray for them. And she's praying. Flash to the next scene. This guy wakes up in the hospital, and he can't get this vision out of his mind. The man that was in the accident. A few months go by, because it took a while for him to find what he was looking for, and he knocked on the door of this woman's house one day. And he said, "I wanted to thank you for praying for me." And she didn't remember. And she said, "But I," he said, "well, in the accident, I saw your car. I was floating above when I got in the accident. I left my body." He said, "I was floating above, and I was looking at the cars," and he said, "I got attracted and pulled towards your car." And he said, "I remember the license plate number." He said, "And it took all this time for me to find you through tracking of your license plate number." He said, "I just came to thank you for praying for me, because I heard you praying for me, and I'm a complete stranger, and I thought it was really wonderful." You see, he didn't die. Now, where was he? And how did he find her? And how did he get that number? Now, the day I heard that, and I had heard 1,000 stories like that, I thought they were fine. But the day I heard that one, why, I just, that day, was ready to believe that that existed. And that was the beginning of the opening of that door for me. And I never looked back. And then I knew I wasn't alone. You see, my whole life, I have felt I have been alone. The night I tried to kill myself, and before coming to AA, never quite got around to it, got to AA instead. I didn't kill myself because I knew that I would be so lonely and be alone. I would be alone forever. So I didn't care if there was another life or not. It didn't matter to me. I was alone. I didn't feel connected to my mother, my family. You know, what is it with somebody that has no connection like that? I just felt disconnected from everybody. I mean, I had a family, had a country, had all that stuff. I just felt like every time I connected to them, I was ripped out or taken out of my country or taken away from my grandmother or taken to a new country. Just didn't feel connected to anything. It was a horrible personal pain. Alcoholism didn't satisfy it. Obviously, I would be still doing it. So here I was in AA, and you know, I still kind of felt it. And then I kind of got the connection with the AA people and started to get the little connection with the God, and it went right back. Man, I was doing the Station at the Cross, and you know, I loved going to the church and sitting there and looking at the statues and things, because it was the only thing I knew. It was familiar. It was very familiar to me. And then as the years went by, and I substituted one God for the other, and I studied a little more about this religion and that religion, and I listened a little more to people, I thought, wow, it's all about the search. And I don't know what this is all about. I began to know and to feel. See, I felt the presence of that angel. I mean, I used to joke about it, but the truth is, it was there. The truth is, I felt it. The truth is, I could lean into it. Now, that's what I thought, so that made it true for me. And when my angel kind of went off, and I grew up, I needed something. And then my brother died. I was sober. And he died from this disease. And he was 21 years of age. And he died on St. Patrick's Day. And his name was Patrick. And it was a very, very painful experience for me. And I liked having my brother present. I believed it. All the things that happened, I believed it. I believed that he was there. The whole family met. We all laughed. My mother went to say goodbye. She was the last one out. We were all waiting outside, every one of us. And yet, my mother said later to my brother, "Thank you for coming to get me and carrying me out." My brother, my other live brother, he didn't. But my brother that had passed away was very tall, and my mother's very small. And he used to come up behind her and lift her up and lead her around. And she said, "I knew it was time to go when Billy," the wrong brother, the one that didn't, "came and lifted me up and led me out." I'm available to hear all that now. It has to be a very loving God that allows you all that, that gives you back those that have gone on, that heals you with them, that lets you talk to the dead, that lets you make an amend to someone that after they're gone. You don't have to believe it. I believe it. That's what's happened to me in AA. I have one foot here and one foot there. It's marvelous. It's marvelous. That's why it was so easy for me to say to my Uncle Packy, "Welcome to Tulsa, Oklahoma. I'm sorry that you're not in this life. Lots of experiences here. Sure don't want to go myself. You must have made the decision to get out. More power to you. I'm going to miss you. I'm going to miss you. I'm going to miss the familiarity of you, of knowing you were there, of feeling safe, of knowing that in Ireland somebody was still there for me. But you're not there now. But welcome to Tulsa, and I will learn a way to communicate with you in this new way. I will not throw you away, and I will not forget you. That's the kind of God I have now. There's no judgment. There's no anything. I'm not going to burn in hell. If I go and do something wrong, well, hell, I'm going to have to amend it or I'll feel terrible. But I will never be thrown away and I will never be abandoned. I know that. It's the gift. It's promised to me all through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Why would a God who took me off a bathroom floor throw me away? And yet I know that the same God is taking care of my sister. And she's making a total bunch of different decisions than I'm making. Here I am, sober on Alcoholics Anonymous, and there she is, with everything available to her, addicted to opiates, committing suicide, one pill at a time, in front of my eyes. I'm sad because she's my sister. I'm sadder because she's throwing away her life. She's got a different deal with her God than I do. That's all. They've got some other trip happening, and I don't know what it is. I'm only concerned because I selfishly don't want to feel the pain. But I know this. If I have to, I will. I have friends. I have AA. I have the love of my brothers here and there. I have my family here and there. I have a God that I trust. I have somebody waiting for me. I have somewhere to go. I know where I'm going. I know they are there. I am not afraid. I can't believe I'm not afraid. So, take the best. Leave the worst. Make it your own. And don't defend it. It says in AA, do not defend yourself or your God. I do not defend myself. I rarely talk about it, but if I had to, I wouldn't defend it. This psychic experience they talk about, this huge change, believe me, I have known people that are sober longer than I, that are very highly evolved people, and they have had experiences that have been profound. This woman that I mentioned earlier, Betsy Riordan, I mean, big, died at 40-something, 8 years of sobriety. Incredible experiences. Yoga in her 70s, for Christ's sake. And, you know, way ahead of me, believes in all sorts of things. Wonderful. Just wonderful. People that are willing to say, hey, there's got to be more, it's got to be big, it's bigger. Don't limit yourself. I can't even tell you how big it is, it's so big. I expect to be comforted by my brother if something happens to my sister. I expect it. I expect to make way for all those things. I expect to be greeted when I get there. I can only assume that it's just different. Now, when I was drunk, and now that I'm sober, I mean, these are two totally different things. They're totally different. I have a funny feeling that the life of the living and the life of the dead are just different, that's all. It's just a different perception. I find most of the time for myself, when I am in great pain, usually over a death, that I find more peace from those that have gone on than the struggle of those that are living who are trying to help me. All they can do is what they do so lovingly and so generously. Say, would you like a cup of tea? Have you had enough to eat? You need to sleep. Perhaps you could talk. Would you like to take you to a meeting? Is there anything I can do for you? I understand. I love you. It's going to be okay. You'll get through this too. That's what we give each other. That's the most blessed thing we can give each other. Where does that come from? that come from that we automatically in AA know how to do that? I don't think it came from me naturally. I think it comes from the better nature of my who I am. I think it comes from the great reality deep within. The same gentleman, Kabi Sabi, as I mentioned yesterday, said he no longer prays to God. He prays from God. He prays from God. Oh, from God. From God. To be plugged into that kind of source of power is so huge. I could barely say it. You know, they say, isn't it in Latin, Jane, that the eyes are the fountains looking out? Not things looking in, but looking out. How do you look out and see what you see, as opposed to just taking it in? Very different. This is such a new area for me. You see, they never wrote anything after the 12 and 12. The guy died. Bill Wilson was a huge fan of metaphysics. I really wish that he had written another book, you know, when he was 20 or 30 or sober. I would love to have known where the divine intervention that occurred for this book would have taken him if he had written a book when he was 20 or 30 or sober. Where would it take us? There's nobody to guide us. There's nobody to lead the way. This is it. It's an individual journey from here on. I can tell you, we're all going to take 1,000 paths. Mine is getting broader all the time. I'm beginning to believe things I can't believe I'm beginning to believe. And I expect more. I want to walk into my house like my mother, who does it unconsciously. And when I hear a knock on the door, I want to say, let them in. Open my door and fill my house with everything invisible. I want to listen to the silent thoughts. I want to be able to shake hands with all the help that's available to me. Religion is a great thing. It taught me how to be spiritual. Religion tells me what to think. Spirituality tells me to soar. To take what I have thought and throw it away. Because it's too limited. It's too little. My concept of God now is so big. It changes every day. You could talk to me next week, be a whole new thing. But the basis will be the same. It'll be the same because I protect it. I protect it by showing up at meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I protect it by looking into the eyes of other alcoholics. I'm protecting it by knowing that I am safe. I am safe in the world as long as I am safely folded within the arms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I will have enough courage to go out, spread my wings, share with others even. But I don't ever forget that this is my sandbox. This is where I play. This is where I live. This is where I learned how to grow up. This is where I found my God. You are the people that have saved my life. A complete stranger will save my life. Tap on the sidewalk. Great chapter. You bet it is. Thank you.